Hello, gamers. They found us. I can't believe it. Someone must have tipped them off and they found us. God damn it, they're firing donkey cannons at us. Listen, folks, you've tuned into the show where we tell you the truth about video games. Free, independent, unmoored. And we are dedicated to that and to you. And even with the Nintendo fleet catching up with us here on the HMS Games, we're committed to bringing you the best games journalism we can offer. With that in mind,
Attention all crew! Our broadcast will be continuing as normal this week while we take evasive action against the chase these bastards at Nintendo are giving us. I want to think, pieces, people! Your topic this week is, twisted depictions of psychology in games. Now!
Well, folks, this will be an interesting one. I'll see you on the other side of this broadcast of Save Our Games.
What's up, kids? JP Factboy here, aka the Fact Blaster. Today, spitting facts about depictions of mental health in games, specifically violence and mental health problems. Crazy people, they're dangerous, right? Oops, probably not. People with mental health conditions make up about 5% of violent crime maximum, and even then is usually comorbidous with substance abuse, poverty, and a violent upbringing. People with mental health conditions are far more likely to be the victims of violence than the perpetrators.
Fact.
But not according to many action games. In these, crazy people are dangerous, inhuman thugs, unhinged raiders ambushing you in Fallout, identical gangs of goons lining up to get concussions from Batman in the Arkham Knight series. Even the arch-charismatic villains of the Far Cry series play into a trope of manic psychopathy as the source of the atrocities they preside over and instigate. Games didn't invent this perspective, but many now contribute to it, combining depictions of unhinged attackers with fears of a working-class mob, an unreasonable horde who must be put down with a short, sharp shock. Games are usually systems in which the player creates order. You put the boxes in the right place, you navigate to the end of the level, you fight until the fighting stops, like puzzle pieces being put into the right place. The often singular perspective of games makes them susceptible to conflating make everything right with make everything ordered or make everything quiet. If the thugs are knocked unconscious or killed, then the problem is solved. Action games especially struggle with this because the fundamental solution to the puzzles of their design is hitting stuff. And folks, hitting stuff is not always bad, but when uncritically layered on a worldview that ignores systemic injustice, it'll tend to support damaging ideas about crazy people, that they're dangerous and their danger can only be solved with abuse. Outlast is an interesting game with regards to this trope. It's a found footage version of the old haunted asylum trope, except the asylum is still occupied. The inmates, victims of horrific experiments performed by the doctors, are still there. Some are violent and some are not. Many are just pitifully lost in themselves. But they are still scary, and the expectation of violence is still there. If it were an action game about empowerment instead of a horror game about disempowerment, you can safely expect players would be cracking skulls with righteous abandon. Many games say their violence, interpersonal violence, and abuse of power happens because of the fundamentally broken brains of certain people. This ignores the structural pressures that makes these problems systemic. Like, even if they were right about the ferocity of people with mental health issues, it wouldn't be about the structural violence of poverty, racism, patriarchy, and a privatized, inaccessible provision of mental health care.
Fact.
Punching working-class mentally ill people isn't even the very limited solution that many action games pretend it is. Mental illness doesn't usually look like outbursts of violence. It's more often the inability to focus or complete tasks, the inability to leave bed, the inability to self-regulate, an intrusive feeling of hopelessness, a susceptibility to drug abuse, and self-harm. And that's hard to model in a video game. The closest they've come is the great but very specific Depression Quest, which specifically removes player agency on account of the protagonist's depression. Not every game has to deal with mental illness, but games without the subtlety to handle it as a topic should try to avoid reinforcing negative stereotypes. It shouldn't be too much to ask that games at least start to challenge themselves on this.
Can you get it back? Do we have a backup transmitter? We're live! We can't operate on radio silence! Do I look like John Cage?
Are we back?
Oh, Kong, you absolute magician! I knew you could fix it! Good golly, gamers! You join me on the bridge, where maritime pilot Fox has asked me to come and get better informed on our escape route from the Nintendo fleet. Hi there, Fox!
Captain, take the wheel!
What?
The wheel! Here, take it!
All right! What are you up to here, Fox?
Diverting all available power to the engines, Captain, so we can get out of here.
Wait, Fox, we can't divert power from the broadcast.
Aubrey, we need to. They're firing cannons at us. Stay on that wheel while I do this.
Fox, this broadcast is the heart and soul of the HMS Games. We cannot cut it short.
Aubrey, look around. This ship is good, but do you see those new Nintendo ships? They can break off into several smaller boats and reform into a larger frigate. We need all the power we can muster to deal with that, and we can't spare the energy that broadcasting live takes away from the engines.
God. How long do you need?
What?
Get clear of the cannons. How long do you need?
I don't know. Maybe 10 minutes?
All right. Hold on there. Khan, do you hear me?
Aubrey, the wheel. Watch the wheel.
You've got it, Fox. You've got it.
Reading you, Aubrey.
Khan, we're going to suspend the live broadcast.
Suspend? Save our games? Captain! Are you sure?
Not completely, Khan. What's the longest segment you have from the archives?
Maybe 5 minutes?
All right, perfect. Get it ready, and on my mark, get that segment on the Save Our Games frequency. Override anything going out live. Got it?
Aye, aye.
Fox, I'm giving you 5 minutes with the added engine power. Get the ship as safe as you can in that time.
5 minutes?
Can you do it? Can you do it?
Yes, Captain.
That's my pilot. All right, Khan?
Yes?
Get that reel playing in 3, 2, 1. Nap!
Hello, good evening, and hi! It's me, Sam, from H21 Gaming. And you and I are very lucky this afternoon to have gotten our hands on a review copy of Tech9's much-awaited new addition to their rhythm game series, Rhythm Ninth Circle. We're going to be doing a bit of a hands-on first look at the game today and see what we think about the mechanics we've come to know and love in their latest iteration. So let's give it a go! Alright, so let's start out with the arcade mode. Here we go! Okay, here we go! Da da da! Huh, that's odd. I'm used to be pretty good at these things. Da!
Bad!
I'm not bad. Oh, I see where I'm going wrong. I just have to line it up with the little reticule. When that hovers over the right place, that's when I press the button. Da, 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 da! Oh, come on! That was right on the... Okay. Da! Gah! Da, 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 da! Alright, I got the hang of it now. I know where the response window is. Da da! No! Da da da! Yes! Da da! Yes! Da! Well, that's probably enough of that. So, how about we quickly. Da da da!
Bad.
That was not bad! head! Da, 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 da! All right, one more go. Just gonna get through this level. Da, da, da! Da, da! Yes! 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 I am the music monarch! Why would it construct it like that? It's not even in the right...
Jesus! I could have reached out and touched that one.
Phil, are you there?
Reading you. Jackson is here too.
Hi, Aubrey.
Phil, we're back on air. You're near a mic. I need you to fill a segment.
You what?
You can do it, Phil. I believe in you. You're a valued member of the Save Our Games presentation team. I've got to fix a leak that sprung up here. Good luck!
Aubrey, I don't have anything prepared.
Don't worry, Phil. I've got it. With H.P. Lovecraft's works solidly out of their copyright, countless games, both physical and digital, are drawing on the author's distinct mythos and brand of psychological horror as their setting. But how do these titles gamify Lovecraft's predisposition towards unknowable and inconceivable cosmic horror? I'm Soliloquy Jackson, the technol investigationist, and I'm here to investigate. Like many Lovecraftian protagonists, the player characters of recent Cthulhu Mythos games lose their grasp on reality in response to the mind-bending realizations of what they experience. Most of these games demonstrate this to the player with an insanity meter, a blue bar counting down the player sleuth's mental fortitude lower and lower the more they see.
Oh, like sanity checks in the Call of Cthulhu RPG. Betrayal and House on the Hill do something similar, too.
That's right, Phil. Developer Cyanide's Call of Cthulhu video game has a slightly more complicated version of the same system, and Frogware's The Sinking City features a straightforward insanity bar that you can replenish by popping pills. And isn't this such a juvenile approach to existential horror? Surely games, as a medium where people have expectations of certain systems, have massive potential to really simulate the unknown and the unknowable. But these games choose to give the player power and agency over their own sanity level. And that, to me, is such a corruption of Lovecraft's themes.
So?
What?
Why is that a bad thing?
It's what makes Lovecraft, Lovecraft. Not tentacles and 1920s Massachusetts, but true brain-sludging horror.
Well, that's not what these games are, is it?
And that's exactly the problem.
That they're not faithful to that kind of horror? I don't get it. I mean, is it really so terrible that most of them just want to be good games that draw on the iconography of the Cthulhu mythos? Why owe allegiance to the source material?
Because that's what makes Lovecraft's books special.
Read them, have you?
Well,
page-turners, they were not. Besides, H.P. Lovecraft was a man with terrible views, even for his time period as a rich white man. His ideas are rightly in the public imagination to be pilfered. Yes, it would be cool to see games deal with the unknown in a mechanical way, but many do that already without engaging the Cthulhu mythos. Eldritch horror is just another aesthetic now, and that's fine. We haven't lost anything as a culture by its proliferation.
But it's infuriating to see sanity described as something that simply goes from 100% downwards rather than the complex and multifaceted reality of how brains operate.
Well, I agree with you there. That part is totes unculio.
Well, I'm glad we agree on that.
Wanna play the Arkham Horror card game?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Listen to tales
of sunny, it's sunny, the sunny band.
Jiminy crickets, am I on? Hello? Right, I think so. Okay, so, I picked up an assignment from Aubrey to, explore a game in which you traverse a character's unreliable mind. Well, obviously many games spring to mind. Sprunged? No. Well, lots of games went to my head, but only one could take the cake, so to speak. Evil Within 2. Tango Gameworks and John Johanna's sequel to Shinji Mikami's fantastic... well, it's like Resident Evil. You play Sebastian Castellanos, who... I'm recording. Can you see the red light?
The red light isn't on, and I'm booked for this room now.
Oh, it's you. Well, you can't come in. This is my studio time. I check with Aubrey myself.
As did I.
What? Well, you'll have to reschedule. I've already started.
This is my studio time, Tony. I booked in and I'm not leaving.
Oh, come on. Do you even have an assignment to talk about today?
Yes. Explore a game in which you traverse a character's unreliable mind.
No way.
What?
That's my topic. You took my thing.
I was given this by Aubrey.
So was I.
What? She gave us both the same topic and the same recording slot?
Oh. She's trying to get us to present together again.
It's not going to work.
Ever.
So, you might as well leave.
I'm not going.
Me neither.
Well, then, I'll continue.
Fine.
You play as Sebastian Cas... I'm doing The Evil Within 2.
Oh, right.
You probably haven't heard of it.
I haven't.
Well, it was really the only choice.
Is that right?
I suppose you pick something more pedestrian. The Alice games? Persona?
Crush 3D.
What?
Crush 3D.
What is that?
It's a game.
Well, what's it about? What's it run on?
It's a 3DS game.
Of course.
Produced by Zoe Mode and published by Sega.
Sega?
And it's a puzzle platformer where you switch between a 3D perspective and a crushed 2D perspective. Say if there's a bridge that's too disconnected to cross in 3D, you crush the image down to two dimensions and in a way that lines up and you can get across.
I don't get it.
It's easier to describe visually.
No, how does that fit the assignment?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. You play Danny, best friend to a mad scientist who's made a new invention, a machine called...
The 3D machine?
Crush. It's called Crush.
Right.
And the machine puts Danny inside his own mind and traps him there due to unresolved feelings. Each of the levels is part of Danny's subconscious and he has to work through them to resolve his feelings and escape.
Oh.
But there's more! See, Danny doesn't recognise his memories, and as he goes deeper, the Crush computer itself starts flirting with him. It turns out the computer is keeping him there because it thinks he's someone it loves. And you're exploring his psyche, not yours.
Oh, that is odd.
Right. Here's the kicker. Crush 3D is a remake of a game called Crush, where a different guy uses this machine to undergo treatment for insomnia.
I thought the scientist guy invented the machine.
Well, yeah, I don't understand that bit. But it's the mind of that guy you're working through in Crush 3D.
Oh, and that explains why the levels are the same in the remake as the original.
Exactly.
That's so clever.
Yeah. So you picked Resident Evil 2?
The Evil Within 2, yeah.
What's it about?
Well, you're a cop.
Ooh.
I know, but he doesn't actually do police stuff. His daughter has died, and his wife has left him, and he's an alcoholic, and he's traumatized, and he's alone. And he's tipped off that his daughter isn't really dead. She's been kidnapped, and her brain is powering a computer simulation called...
Crush!
Well, no, but it may as well be. It's called STEM. And he plugs himself into it to go rescue her. And it's horrific in there. And eventually, he finds his wife, who's keeping the daughter locked away in the simulation out of overprotectiveness. After a big boss fight, she realises her mistake in keeping what she loves locked away like that. She swaps places with the daughter, brings down the simulation, and Sebastian and his daughter can finally be together again.
And happy?
Yeah.
Why was the wife keeping the daughter trapped?
I guess she thought
it was safer to lock her away. Isolate her. Not let her be whole because she was scared of letting her get hurt.
And she realizes sometimes you have to risk getting hurt. To be together, they have to expose themselves somewhat to find a sense of belonging.
Yeah. And you fight a serial killer photographer with a hall full of exploding heads.
Oh, gnarly.
Right? Hey, Ben?
Yeah, Don?
Wanna go grab dinner in the cafeteria?
I would like that a lot.
Nope, cafeteria not safe! No, run, run, run! Way to go, Wayfinders! That's a bit of distance put between us and the fleet, and we've almost made it to the end of the show. We're actually getting through this. We're actually doing better than everything Nintendo can throw at us.
Captain?
Hi again, Fox. Excellent work maneuvering the ship.
Aubrey, it's not good.
What?
By my estimations, we're not going to be able to outrun the fleet.
But this is Nintendo's own flagship. It's meant to be the fastest in its class.
I know, Aubrey, but something's up. Even with diverting power from the broadcast, we're not getting the speed we should out of it.
But they've stopped firing donkey cannons into us.
Well, I was doing my best to dodge them, Aubrey, but after they hit us with a few, they seem to stop aiming directly at the ship. I think they maybe want to take it back intact.
Oh, like hell will we let them do that?
If they keep gaining on us, we won't have a choice.
Listen, we're almost done with the episode. Just do what you can for a little while longer. Okay, so it's time for our regular feature where you get to have your say, talking to the show and giving your feedback. It's Call In With The Captain!
It's time for Call In With The Captain!
Boom! And on line one, who do we have? It's Paul. It's Paul from Manga. Paul, how are you doing?
Well, I'm not doing too excellently, Aubrey, I can tell you that much.
Okay, Paul, well, we're not having the best day ourselves here.
It was last week when you threw the phone over at that Hawk fellow. We ended up having a very long chat while he rode over to Barbados, and I'd like to tell you about it.
Paul, not to seem rude, but could we keep it short this week?
Well, it's funny you should say that, Aubrey. See, it all started when he asked what I was up to the weekend before last. Now, of course, for me at that time, that would have been the week before last, but...
Aubrey, they're coming right for us. They're going to ram our communications tower.
Oh, thank goodness.
Keep fighting. Bill, Dave, Ella, James.
I hope they'll be okay. Hi, my name is Ash Henri Jones, and I created these podcasts out of broadcasts that I heard from the Save Our Games show, and thinking that they should be housed somewhere online, as well as being in the form of invisible signals traveling through the air, much like how the rockets of the Nintendo fleet travel on their destination. If you enjoyed the show, then I would really appreciate it if you could give it whatever rating you think it's worth on your podcast player of choice. If you want to help out with the upkeep of the ship, then you can do so at paypal.me/saveourgames. And if you don't want to do that or can't do that for whatever reason, then if you could tell a friend about the show, that would really help. Unity is strength. In this sort of thing. And it's really the only way that shows like this can grow. It's not just me that helps out behind the scenes to make sure this show gets made. Other crew include Kit Reese as the assistant for JP Factboy, aka the Fact Blaster. Lee McCauley helps out Khan. Susie Sawafi helps out Sam. Rory Jones
as the assistant for Phil and Ben. Anthony Ferguson for Tony. Drew Hepkins helps out the man packs, which I also do from time to time, along with Fox and Jackson. I only have one broadcast left from Save Our Games. At the minute, I'm hoping that there will be more. But just to let you know that if there aren't more coming after this, well, it's not looking good. But you'll be able to listen for yourselves. I hope it'll be all right. So thank you very much for listening, and I hope you join us for the final installment of Save Our Games.